Okay, can we take a question? There's a woman here in the middle row. Can you just wait, please, until we get a microphone to you? Now, there you go.
Yeah. Thank you. Esther Carter, Westmeath section of the Irish anti-war movement. I'd like to ask Noam, can he expand at all on the Salvador, so-called Salvador option that Negroponte has taken up in Iraq, with the death squads and state terrorism that we understand is going on there? Well, perhaps he could.
Salvador option has two meanings. One is the reality and the other is the image. The reality is the fact that El Salvador, under the in the first phase of the war on terror, the one in the 1980s, was subjected to massive state terrorism. Maybe 70,000 people slaughtered, the brutal torture, hundreds of thousands of refugees. Almost all the atrocities are attributed to the state security forces. There was an independent truth commission afterwards, all supported by the United States. You may recall that the decade opened with the assassination of an archbishop while he was reading mass, voice for the voiceless, he was called. The decade ended with the murder of six leading Jesuit intellectuals, Latin American intellectuals. Jesuit priests had their brains blown out by an elite U.S.-run battalion, which had already killed thousands of people, led a bloody trail of massacre, and in between, another 70,000 people slaughtered, priests, nuns, human rights activists, mostly peasants, the usual victims. And if anything remotely like this had happened, say, in Czechoslovakia, now, we'd probably have had a nuclear war. You know, certainly everybody would be screaming their heads off about it. But since we did it, it didn't exist. Okay, that's the Salvador option. There's another story, which is that the Salvador option led to democratic elections. Well, take a look at those elections and see what it was. And there's another point to be made about El Salvador and Iraq, which is rarely discussed. The second largest military force in Iraq after the United States is not Britain, it's U.S. mercenaries. Some of them are called contractors, some are called something else, and a large percentage of them are Salvadorans. After the massacres of the 80s, they were kind of out of a job, you know. Like South African mercenaries who are all over the place, kind of out of a job after apartheid was over, and they're being recruited in a kind of a foreign legion. Remember that the old imperial powers, Britain, France, others, they didn't use troops, many troops, to hold down the colonies. They used mercenaries, Gurkhas, foreign legion, and so on. The United States made a mistake in Vietnam. It tried to use a civilian army to fight a colonial war. It didn't work. You need trained killers. Fell apart, the army, to its credit. Now they're turning to high-tech war, and which you don't need a lot of ground troops, and to mercenaries. What's called a volunteer army in the United States is actually a mercenary army. It's a mercenary army of the disadvantaged. People join it because it's the only way to escape what they have to live with. Then you can train into trained killers. Or the best of all are people like Salvadoran murderers who were trained by the United States to slaughter their own populations, now need another job. So that's another part of the Salvador option. And it is the beginning of, along with South Africans and some others, of actually British intelligence cooperates in this and others, of a kind of a mercenary force that might be an appropriate foreign legion for colonial wars.
Okay, there's a man trying to get in desperately up here on the right. Never let it be said that Amnesty doesn't bring people in from the margins. So could we please get either a microphone to him or him to a microphone? Yeah, good.
Luckily, I still have the use of my legs.
Yeah.
This is a question from the cheap seats. Somebody gave me a ticket outside and let me in. I didn't have a ticket. Olivia, we have to keep a queue going. You can't jump in. Everybody else wants to ask a question, so it's not questions and answers. Let the public in.
Okay.
My name's Dermo. And I was
only
trying
asked
to,
one and a half.
I know,
that's
I know,
all.
I know.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
I'm just,
very good.
I'm just, you know, I'm speaking for the rest of the people here.
I won't be greedy, okay.
Okay, and the question I have, there was a beautiful quote. I was standing outside a gate here tonight. I was trying to give out a free paper, which was an anarchist paper, right? Lots of people laughed at me and said, what's that got to do with Noam Chomsky? And they walked on past, but they wouldn't read it, okay? Given that there's an absolute lack of this kind of information in any channels, and you use that beautiful quote, international ignorance, I think, widely...
Intentional ignorance.
Oh, sorry, intentional, yeah. I'm misquoting you already. intentional...
And you're not even in the media.
Yeah. Exactly. Okay, so intentional ignorance and a widely distributed plague amongst the intelligent. I think tonight we have a remarkably intelligent audience. And I think that one of the things, one of the reasons why we stand outside and we give out papers is because we want people to get involved. And I think if everybody in this room, instead of marching up and down O'Connell Street and telling the government that they're annoyed with the war, if we all went down to Shannon and tore down the fence, it would then become pretty bloody obvious, unmanageable to people. So, no, this is a very long-winded question. My question to you is, would you join hands with me and say that you're an anti-capitalist and that all the issues that we fight today are actually byproducts of capitalism, and that's the only way we're ever going to solve the problem, because this could be your last tour, you know, so you may as well get it out there.
Well,
thanks very much.
It's not a secret, I mean, but it's a little more nuanced than that. First of all, nothing remotely like capitalism exists. What's called capitalism is a certain variety of state capitalism. The Irish miracle that everyone's so happy about has very little to do with neoliberal economics. It primarily relies on the dynamic state sector of the U.S. economy. That's where all the high information technology comes from and so on. So we're not even talking about capitalism. There are many evils in the world. You can't identify one of them. But one of the insights, deep insights of the anarchist tradition is that all hierarchic structures, whatever they are, any structure of domination and hierarchy should be challenged. None of it is self-justifying. It has to be challenged, and the burden of proof lies on any supporter of hierarchy and domination, wherever it is, from the family to international affairs. Anyone who supports it has a burden of proof. They have to show that it's legitimate. If they can't show that it's legitimate, it should be dismantled. Sometimes you can show it's legitimate. So if I'm walking down the street with my three-year-old granddaughter, and she runs out into the street, and I grab her hand and pull her back. Now, that's authority, but I think there's a justification for it. But unless you can give some kind of a justification, it ought to be dismantled. That includes state capitalism and lots of other evils in the world.
Okay, there's somebody in the there's somebody in the cheap seats at the back, and I want to let them in. It's only fair to move around the hall as widely as I can. Could you come down to the microphone here? Can we get a microphone to that person? I just want to range as wide as I can. Yes.
Hello, I'll be brief. My name is Mike O'Shea. I'm just a citizen. I'm sure we'd all here like to see, above all, a better balanced world. Less of an empire trying to establish itself and brooking no resistance, that's to say the US. So much of that is its ability to seemingly limitlessly fund military spending. And if we weren't in the world required to both buy and sell oil in dollars, if there was some other currency, maybe a euro of 30 countries, would that help to curb that spending and, as I say, maybe be ending up with a better balanced world?
Well, it's likely that sooner or later the world, the many major powers, East Asia in particular, Northeast Asia, are going to shift to some kind of basket of currencies. They hold huge financial reserves. I mean, I think more than half of foreign exchange, some number like that, reserves are in Northeast Asia, mostly in Japan, secondarily China, South Korea, India, and so on. They're willing to support the dollar. They like to keep the dollar high, for one thing, because that maintains their export markets. But they lose by it in other respects, and sooner or later they'll change. No economist knows when, but everyone expects it, as long as the huge trade deficit exists and so on. What would be the, and then it will include the dollar basis for oil, which is a kind of a compact between the tyrannies that the U.S. and Britain support to run the oil states. They have a compact with the West. Their job is to make sure that the wealth of the region flows to the West, not to the people of the region, and of course to themselves. You know, they have a big rake-off. But how long they can maintain that is, you know, it's not so clear. I mean, there have been democratizing forces in the Arab world for years. They've been crushed by the imperial powers. It's true of Iraq as well. But you can't crush them forever. You know, so sooner or later, something may happen. And yes, these things might, what you describe might turn out to be the case. I don't think anybody can tell you what the consequences of that are. I mean, it would be a terrific shock to the international economic system. And just what it would mean, nobody knows, nor does it do we know how the powerful states, primarily the U.S., would react to it. I mean, they have incredible means of violence in their, at their disposal, and the only thing that can stop them is their own citizens. So we're back to ourselves again. We've got to be prepared for those things and undermine the aggressive militarism that lies behind all of this.
It's as good a note to end on as any. We've passed our half-eight mark, everybody. I'm really sorry. And now, in order to thank our guest for this evening, I think you could all agree he's been extraordinarily generous with his time. To thank him, I want to call on Sean Love, Director of Amnesty International Irish Section. Sean.
Thank you very much, Olivia. I should just say that it's a little over 3 years since I actually contacted Noam and asked him to come and speak at our annual lecture. And with the, what I've since discovered is the typical accessibility and generosity, he was back within minutes by email saying, yes, I would love to, and I'll do my best to schedule it. It gives you an idea of the demand on his time. The very first slot in his schedule was now, and he lived up to the commitment. I'd also like to say that the person in Amnesty International who suggested that we ask Noam was a very beloved colleague of ours, Frank Jennings. And Frank died just before Christmas after a long illness, and it would have been tremendous had he, and he wanted to survive until this lecture tonight. But from Amnesty, we want to dedicate tonight, particularly to the memory of Frank Jennings. I really have to do a few very quick thank yous to Trinity College, for their annual support to us for this event and for their generosity of heart in helping us so positively to move the whole venue to here, to try to bring in as big a crowd as possible when we realise the demand to hear Noam speak. And also to the RDS and to the people who put together the Young Scientists setup, which is where you're sitting now. Within the next 4 or 5 hours, this place will be an empty box. And all of these people had left this in place at a lot of difficulty for themselves with great generosity, and we're very grateful to them for doing that and for such an excellent venue. I obviously want to thank Olivia as well for her now annual great chairing, and to thank all of you for coming. I think it's been a great night. No Amnesty speeches. I think that you were all given one of these leaflets as you came in. If you want to take action with Amnesty on addressing the so-called war on terror, addressing issues of torture as they re-enter international vocabulary and use, the website of Amnesty Irish Section is on the back of this. Just go to the website. You can take action at any level you like. So my final thank you is obviously to Carol and Noam Chomsky for their... Carol's in the front. She's very quiet there, but they come as a team. And we are massively, massively grateful to them for their time. And on behalf of all of you, I would like to thank them very much. And while they're here, and get the ask in for you to come back soon, please. Yeah.